Misosis, the 8th and 9th days of creation, part 2, a chapter from the book titled Anaclism, written by Z. Charnot, started in 1972, published in 2004. I leap. It is so effortful to reach into explicitness with and of patterns more tedious than aesthetic. Every part of the universe is attempting to notify every other part of the universe of its nature, its forms, motions, and forces. That yellow-orange beam was a deposit. It was a report of the nature of other portions of the universe. It was deposited upon or within the substance which could best register its patterns. Living substance. The substance of my body was not necessarily best suited. It was available. There is no eminence which derives therefrom, only a burden. I am therefore discharging that burden as best I can. This orb called a planet moves relentlessly through the heavens. It changes proximity, howsoever subtly, with multitudes of other forms, and trespasses multitudes of fields in the trajectory of its motion. It is not especially needful for it to harmonize with those fields and forms, but it is reasonable, orderly, expedient, and more than that, efficient and aesthetic, for it to take on the mutations of concord with each sector of the universe. The substance of the planet, not exploited or easily influenced by man's whims, will be the first yielding response. Earth changes shall be. Tractable minds will reorient. The minds which do reorient will be in harmony with the geophysical transformations. The meek shall inherit the earth. There is some need to structure this disclosure in a manner less like bursts in sequence and more like a graceful ballet of coded postures and motions. I will earnestly constrain the fullness. Forgiveness will be required should I burst again. The grand thought has a configuration, but it is a moving configuration, not only changing posture, but changing its substance and changing its form like a wildly growing creature becoming ever more graceful, ever more beautiful. There are moments of exquisite beauty of form of the grand thought. They are held hesitatingly and then submitted to the process of transformation, again and still. Eventually, the sequences provide kaleidoscopic shape and color, which provides a kind of concert of growing, allowing one to anticipate the emerging climax of beauty. There ceases to be regret, however, when the form is again more turbulent, moving towards another even more wondrous living pattern. The living motions transform the onlooker in a spell, which causes some divine image to replicate itself in his eye, then in his mind, then in his manner and form, until the center of beauty becomes a sacrificed form, plummeted into the view of a sea of creation with rings or rippling images of the sacred figures, disseminating through the levels of the progressive stages of living substance, until rocks themselves are tainted in measure with the afterglow of the igneous descent of heaven, and they heave, attempting to live. Evolution is the unfolding of something folded. There was a descending arc of isolation, alienation, schemes ever more limited, form ever more lifeless. It is the force of doubt the skeptical arresting of streams which evaded comprehension in their swiftness, and so were halted, retarded, slowed to be encompassed by the slow, dull mind, not understanding that his doubt was a dagger thrust into reality, forming murderous illusion. He did not gain the truth by his insistence that splendor dim for his eyes. He made illusion his gallery of experience and thought himself wise. Unwavering, life-pierced, quickened him tirelessly with taunting delight, sorted the mingled dull substance and fear-laden patterns of his small mind, and blended the skeptic into its scheme. The folding was the work of fear, doubt, ignorance, but it was part of a plan. Creators were to be created. That a creature could be created was not enough, not the work of the grand thought. A creator being created was enough of a task to signify how grand this thought was. A cycle, then folding, then unfolding. Evil, the small scheme, the work of the descending arc of isolation and alienation. Then evolution, the unfolding of the ascending arc. Civilization is a minor work of the grand thought, a work incidental to soul forming, incidental to the organism of fraternities of spirit. This existence, which we grant heaping funds of attention, is only the augmented requirement of the greater pattern. It is the remnant still to be composed. It has no use for all of our attention. So we wake and we sleep. They whom we infringe upon are disguised in flesh of another form in another episode called a lifetime. We are navigated to encounter whom we have abused, but without self-bounding guilt. We are led to face and to admire the orderliness of our own grotesque identities as suitable and required sequences of the whole process of soul forming. Life is a complex change of energy. Freedom is the product of order by and between the free and the territory of his freedom. There is no place of refuse. Nothing we have thought or have felt can be discarded and left unencountered. We determine our destiny with our skill at synthesis, fit together every small scheme. Evil is not to be rejected, it is to be composed into a greater whole. The good of today is the extremity of our capacity to compose and to heed a finite scheme of forces, forms, and motions. The good of today is the evil of tomorrow. There is no form towards which we grow, which is not also a form through which we grow. The grand thought is modeled in our body. Sincerity is the trueness of our thoughts to our inspirations, our feelings to our thoughts, our actions to our feelings. When sincerity is forbidden, discontinuity arises. When we are unable to be true to our feelings in our actions because of social intimidation, a lack of distributive order in society, we thrust a stress into the substance of our bodies. This stress accrues as a limiting of motion or function. We retard the distribution of thought into the augmentary systems of physical existence. Please proceed to part 3.